Erica Tienquist, I am interviewing Raymond Edward Friend, and he's going to talk about his life. So over to you, Raymond. Do you like being called Ray or Raymond?
Ray. I live in Hastings. I've been there since 1980.
Where did you live before that, when you came out in 71?
We lived in a place in Southampton Street in a flat for a few years, and then we moved into a house in Townsend Street. We were there for quite a while until the landlords decided to sell the house on us, and we moved into one of the Parble flats for about 2 years.
So what year would that have been that you bought?
Oh, I wouldn't have a clue.
Probably 83
somewhere around about then.
So then tell us how you came to come to New Zealand, you and your wife.
Well, I didn't have no intentions of travelling at all when I was in England until I met my wife. She had an aunt lived in the same village where I lived, and she came down and we met in a local pub, of all places. We got married about 2 years later, and then I said to her one day, do you want to go back to New Zealand? She said, one day when you're ready. I said, well, let's go then. And we booked. But I could immigrate out here, but she can't immigrate back. So she already had a ticket for the ship to come back. So we paid my fare and we sailed back here. And we left Southampton and ended up in Auckland. Mother-in-law picked us up from Auckland and brought us down to Hawke's Bay, and I've been here ever since.
How long did that take to come on the ship?
About 6 weeks. We stopped at the Canary Islands, but we weren't allowed to get off because it was night time. And then we stopped in South Africa, Cape Town. And then we come over to Aussie, stopped in Adelaide, Melbourne, and then Sydney. And then come over to Auckland. And that's where mother-in-law picked us up in the car and brought us down here.
Had she met you before?
No, she couldn't understand me.
And your wife, what was her name?
Pamela Shirley Taylor. Pamela. Where I lived in England, in East Anglia, was a county of Suffolk. They got what they call broken English, because when I started talking to mother-in-law, it's come out in the Suffolk way.
Difficult yes. to start with. What was your first impression of New Zealand, or particularly Hawke's Bay?
The heat. That was, because in wintertime I'm used to walking around in the snow about a foot deep and being cold and break ice on the tank about inch thick every morning in the winter, and the ground freezes and it goes really hard, and you'll see stones coming through the ground, what you don't see in the summertime, because when it freezes it shrinks,
And our winters here, you don't think they're winters?
Nah. I went in the sea during the winter when I first came out here because it felt warm. I haven't been in since.
So it would have taken you a year or two to get acclimatised properly.
Yeah, I wouldn't put shorts on for a start with. Mother always kept saying to me, why don't you put some shorts on? No, I ain't gonna wear bloody shorts. But she convinced me, I did. Now when I get them on, I don't get them out of them.
So can you tell us about your first job with Fernware? I think.
Yeah, mother-in-law sort of helped me to get that job because she had two brothers work there, and she mentioned it to her two brothers, and they got hold of the boss, whose name was Little, I think, and they said, oh, be down here Monday morning, please. We'll see you then.
And what was your job there?
I was cutting up tubular steel for school furniture, all different lengths, and then they go from me, and that went to the presses to bend them and everything, and then they all got welded together and fixed up and shipped out to schools and that.
Did they go all over New Zealand to schools?
Yep. Yeah, they had a rep in Fernware. They used to go around to schools getting the orders, what they wanted and everything.
So where was Fernware at that stage?
It was on Hiratonga Street, right opposite Southern Road, which is now where Big Save Furniture is. And Stuart Greer's garage used to be the other side of it.
How many people would have been employed there?
Oh, quite a few.
20 or?
Oh, it's no more than that.
40 or
yes,
so?
Yeah, probably would. They used to make caravans as well there, yeah.
And were they good employers?
Yeah, I got well with them, but why I left was because they were going to be moved down to Maho Road because cycling took them over. And I was in the orphans club and I was talking to one of the jokers who used to work for the P&T. And I said, is there any jobs going to the P&T? I'm looking for another job. He said, no. He said, Have a little talk with that fella. Joke, his name was Jack Monks. He said he worked for the par board. And I spoke to Jack. He said, oh, mate, he said, I'll see what I can do. Wednesday lunchtime, I was sitting at home and a joker named Bernie Humphries turned up from the par board. He said, you want another job? I said, yeah. He said, when can you start? Eh? I thought, well, I've got to give a week's notice where I am. And like some, so I started there on the par board. I can't remember. I know it was August.
What year would that have been?
73, when I started the par board. And I was there for, started as a trainee lineman like George.
George Kelson.
And, you know, I started, went on the underground for 3 years and then went up on the lines. And I went to Kenine Heights. I didn't like going up the poles and hanging out in the belt. And they put a notice on the notice board, is anybody interested in learning cable jointing? I thought, oh, it doesn't mean climbing. So I said, put my name down. And the overseer of the lines wanted to know why I wanted to move and all this, that and the other. And I told him, I said, well, while I'm there, I aren't too keen on the heights. So I thought cable jointing would be better for me. And so it gives somebody else a chance who wanted to climb. And I went cable jointing as a trainee cable jointer.
How long did your training take?
Oh, a few years. Because everything keeps changing, that's it. And I train and I come qualified, and I ended up a foreman on the truck. I was a foreman and a joker underneath me, working with me underneath.
Did they provide uniforms?
Yep, everything, overalls, stools, whatever you want, yeah.
How did it work when you had a storm like Bowler?
Nightmare. I was still on lines then when that happened, and you know, you go from daylight to dusk. The dark all the time, and because we just kept going and going and going until everybody was fixed up.
Pam, how did she get on coping with you being out?
She coped. That's my job, so you know, that's sort of why she had to cope.
Where'd you go out in country areas too?
Yeah, oh yeah, all over the place. Well, we went to one job, we left the yard, and when we got there, we had smoker, and then we finished. And after lunch, we got the smoker time in the afternoon, and he'd turn around and come back again because we were way out in a wop-wop somewhere.
But can you tell us a bit about the maps?
No, the maps I had, when the overseers used to have all the maps, what the jobs were and that, and they knew where they were going. The maps I used to have, I got from the par board when I was running. So I knew exactly where I was going and how far, because they're all done to scale.
The Harriers,
then. Yeah. Yeah, well, I used to come up with, because probably we used to start at 7:30 in the mornings, and we used to finish at 4:00 in the afternoons. The time I got home, just down Park Road, I'd head out and run about 11 miles.
Did the children join you?
No, they didn't like
or
running.
Or Pam?
No, they didn't like running. I was the mad one.
Would you go to the pub very often?
Not
that?
Here, no.
Because in England you would have,
yeah,
yes.
Because I lived in a little country village. The only really any time in a country village when you're older was the pub.
That was your recreation, so yeah. That's why when you went to the Orphans Club, what did you do in the Orphans Club?
I used to just go and enjoy it to start with, and then got on stage with a group doing different skits and that.
Now, so, I believe you were Lady Gaga.
Yeah, I'd done that about 4 years ago. How that come about, I was working over in Napier with one of the contractors when the par board got rid of us, and she went up to Auckland and see Lady Gaga, so she filmed it on her camera. She thought, oh, I wonder if I could do that. And I heard her song, Bad Romance, and I didn't know what it was, so I rang the radio station up and asked what that was called, and they told me it's Bad Romance. So I got the disc and that and sort of followed her after that, and I said, Pam, one day, I said, I wonder if I could do it as a skit. I talked to one or two of the jokers at the office. Yeah, go on, you mad bugger, do it. So I shall I? And I started sort of doing it, and then another one come along, and he said, and the Parney Club was going in, and Glenda Rickard, she was quite a good entertainer, and I showed her what I was doing. She said, rubbish, rubbish, rubbish. She said, this is what you've got to do, and she put me through all the different actions, and then she said, what you got dressing? No, that's no good. And Dave Sainer, another orphan, he said, leave it with me. He said, I'll get my wife Kath to have a look and see what we can do. So they did.
And a wig as well.
Yep, yes. Wig, mask, high heel shoes. And so he got the skirt, and I went round to Dave's, and he got all the stuff. She said, put the skirt on and everything on. She said, no, that's too long, cut it shorter. So she done it. She said, you better try all this on. And he said, well, go through it with the Parney Club. Because in their interval, so we'd done it for them.
What is the Parney Club, can you tell me?
That's the orphans' wives. I formed a club because they're not allowed in with us because they don't have ladies in the orphans. And so I formed the own club. And
how is it spelled?
I can't remember now. Pani Club. My suffocation ain't coming out again. And when I'd done it for them, Dave came at me. I said, "Dave, how short did she make that skirt?" I said, "She should take 4 inches." Or, "Oh, yeah, she made a mistake. She took 6. Girl, that was really short, but it didn't really matter.
Did you act as any other character that we would know about?
No, I hadn't been on stage much at all because lots of times I was doing the lights for the stage. When we first went there was a stairway and you used to sit up high, lights, and you used to sit up there and you look down at the stage like this. But now, have you ever been in the Orphans Club?
Yes.
But all the lights right at the back now.
The Hastings Orphans Club is still going strong, isn't it?
Yeah, just had a centennial year 2 or 3 years ago. We had all that down at Linda's Farm because we had got the room for all the people that come.
So it's still popular. Do you still go to it?
Yeah.
How often would you go?
No, it's only through the winter months. Every other Tuesday during the winter months, so we have about 13 meetings a year. Yeah.
What do they do with the money they raise?
Well, we just done a concert last weekend for Enliven. We don't know how much they made yet. That's well over 100 people there, I think.
Because it is a fundraising thing, isn't
it? Yeah, well, they do a lot of all these collections and that, blind and all that. They have people stand out helping them out as well.
I've been to 2 concerts of the Orphans Club.
Yeah, well, when I first joined, there were well over 100 members. But to see a lot of them keep dying off, and you can't get, that's not what the young ones want today. And so you just can't get new members. That's why a lot of the clubs, what's still going, have got the wives in and partners in. Like Teradoc Savage Club now, they've got all their partners. And half of their members belong to the Hastings Orphans Club.
Belong to both.
Belong to both. Because they'll go to the Teradoc because they can take the partners or wife with them, but they can't
to the Orphans Club.
Unless there's a special night they can take them.
And with the Harriers, was that Hawke's Bay? Or
Hastings Harriers.
And would you meet every Saturday?
Yep, Saturdays.
When you're doing marathons or half marathons or whatever, how far would you run usually?
A marathon is 42K and a half marathon is 21. But the Harriers used to have competitions amongst themselves, have runs in cross-country, road runs and everything like that.
Did you win anything?
I won one trophy. They used to have a race from Napier to Hastings, and you had to put what time you do it in. I got the closest time, so I got what they call a Eleanor Strickland trophy.
What year would that have been?
Well, it would have been late 80s or early 90s.
And the boys didn't take any part in that?
They used to come running with me in the Saturday afternoons, but the oldest one weren't very keen on it, the youngest one weren't, but they used to come.
To go back to the cable jointing, would you work Saturday morning?
Usually just Monday to Friday, but if you got shutdowns or something, you could be working Saturdays and Sundays as well, breakdowns.
And did you get called out at night?
Yes.
And when you left the house, you may not know what time you were going to be back.
It all depends what the job was. It could be a big job, it could be a little job. We got called out to the job at Havelock. Oh, it must have been about 10, 11 o'clock at night. And we finished that job about 6 o'clock in the morning. And they had a shutdown over at Napier, which had got to be done, tied up the Napier City Council. And the other jointer decided to take the day off.
So you had to go.
Well, we weren't supposed to because after what we'd worked till 6 o'clock in the morning, it's compulsory law to have a break. And Ian Hay, who was the manager at that time, he said, "Well, that job has got to be done and you're the only ones here. Will you work?" I said, "Well, I'm bloody tired." But I said, "Yeah, I'll work." He said, "Well, leave it with me." He said, "What about Monty?" I said, "Well, I can't speak for him." He asked him, he said, "Yeah, he'd work." He went back to the office. I said, "No, I've got to go home." And he told him, "You've got to do this, that, and the other. It's got to be done." And he come back. He said, "They won't let you work." And he went away again. He come back. He said, "They said they'll let you work because that job has got to be done." He said, "What we'll do, you're on double time now. You'll stay on double time until you go home." And it's what we did. We got back to the yard about 3:30 that afternoon. And that was a Thursday. And he said, "Go home." He said, "I don't want to see you here till Monday morning." We had the Friday off and we were told not to call us.
How many cable jointers would there have been then in the area?
When I first started, I think there was 2 cable jointers. Then when the underground start getting bigger, and I take my lines down. It got bigger and bigger. Now, I think there's about four of us at one stage, but then some of them left, and we ended up with three qualified jointers, or four of us, but we're both two on each truck. So if one was away, the other one could carry on with somebody, with a linesman.
One of the linesmen would join you, and you would tell them what had to be done.
Yeah, and if we want some line work done, you had the linesman there to do the pole work as well, which we couldn't do.
Were you anywhere where there was an electrical fault where you perhaps got zapped?
Most of the times, yeah, because we were dealing with 11,000 volt cables and 33 volt cables, which you're not supposed to touch because that bites you.
So you'd have boots that were rubber?
Oh, we had leather boots with rubber soles. You weren't allowed to have screwing soles. Just covered up with overalls and that.
And your hats?
White hats or orange hats. Ours were white. And they were horrible.
Were they? Too hot in the summer?
Yeah.
So would you take your own lunch?
No, just give us tea. We had a thermet. You used to boil the water in. You said, make your own cups of tea and that.
Particularly out in the country area.
Even in town, you had the thermets, yeah. When we were cable joining, we used to have to use what we call pitch, and that comes in a tin, and that's real hard, and you had to break it up and put it in a bucket, and you used to have to heat it up. So what we'd done, we used to get a kettle and just put it on the gas ring, so having the kerosene thermet.
You can make your own soup as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, you get one of them toasted sandwiches things, what you fold up and stick it on the gas, and you have a hot cheese sandwich and... We made use of it.
Can you explain what pitch is?
It's like tar. When it cools off, it goes hard. What they had was a big, what we call a cast iron box, and it had a lead sleeve in where you put all your wires together, and then you had to fill that up with pitch, and then you had to seal it, and then you put the lid on the cast iron box, and then you'd fill it up with it, because that was all really hot stuff. You just poured it in, and when it goes off, it goes...
The join, would it be about a metre long?
Yeah, and they were heavy.
And how often would you have to have a join like that?
Oh, well, when they're running cables, if it's running a cable here and they've got a carry on, you put a joint here, or if you've got a fault, say it's a cable blowing up, you've got to go and fix it, and you put one of these joints on it.
The roll of cable, how much would it weigh?
A lot, because it's got lead in it. You had the three cores.
Inch diameter?
It always depends. You're in all different sizes. There can be some that's thin like your finger, and some would be like that. And there's them, and it's covered with what we call papers, and then it's all impregnated. And that was all wrapped in another lot of papers.
And was it shipped in from overseas?
Oh, no, I think it was made in New Zealand. It was heavy. It was all lead, and then the lead was about a quarter of an inch thick, all wrapped around it.
How long would an average cable last in the ground?
Quite a long time. Well, this place would be all underground. There's no potholes, is there? It's all underground.
And how would you check where the...
fault? Test room used to come out and what we used to call the thumper. They put this on the end of one end of the cable and send this pulse through it. And you could walk along a footpath like this over the cable route and you could feel it going boom, boom. But they had a thing they used to go along with properly to make sure it was in the right place, like earphones on, so you could hear the pulse.
What were they called?
The test room. Yeah, they test the cable.
And how many testers would they have at the same time?
Well, there's quite a few. They had all different jobs in the test room doing other jobs as well. Just a job they'd done amongst all the other ones they used to do.
Would you always have a person in charge and a cable layer?
Usually the foreman on the job would be in charge. Well, it could be the cable joiner who's in charge. If you were foreman on the track, you could be the one that was in charge.
And then there was the test run, and then ordinary linesman.
Yeah, well, the cables, that'd be just mainly the jointers here, because it's an underground cable, so they wouldn't want linesmen there, unless you want something done up the pole.
Did you have many problems with people ploughing up a cable?
Diggers, they'd be the main culprits. But, you know, really, most of them are pretty careful, because they used to send somebody around a mark. If there's somebody who's doing a digging and that, they send somebody out to mark where the cable was, and so they know exactly where it is.
Now, when you're laying this cable, do you try and go as much in a straight line as possible?
Yeah, they do.
Or curve round? Did it have many faults where it was curved?
You can only bend it a certain degree. You can't bend it like a horseshoe.
No. Ray's holding up his hands. That's the size of some cables.
Oh, yeah.
Would they have other cables in with the cable?
Yes, they've usually put the, when you're laying cables, if it's doing a big run, it's like some division or something, and they want 33, they had 33 on the bottom, yeah. Then they'd have so much saw, and then they'd put 11, and then so much saw, and then they'd put the 240. Then on top of that, Telecom would come along, or PNT it was in.
So you were working for the Hawke's Power Board for about 26 years, and then the company was diversified.
Something like that. They decided to put a lot of the work out to contract, and so they kept, I think it was about 17 lines, and then when they took them down, and it came Unison. And then I went with one of the contractors over in Napier. I had to travel to Napier every day. But after a while, I was a cable joiner for them. And they had a little old truck I used to go around in. I had a little car to go over there. Mm. And they got me a brand new van. And I rigged it out and said, you can take the van home. I used to have the van at home and just travel back and forth. So it cost me nothing to travel. So, yeah.
And when did you actually retire?
Well, I don't know what the year was when the Power Board went out. I must have been with United. Well, we started off as Gooders, and then that went United Gooders, and then that went United Group. That's what we ended up as. They changed the name. That was an Australian company. And then Unison started taking all the work back in off the contractors, and we were one of them we got put off to start with, and that's when I retired.
And what year would that have been?
Oh, that must have been getting towards 70 when I retired. Yeah, because they gave me a party over there when I was 65.
Yeah. So they did look after you?
Yeah, that's quite good, because we were working out at the port, and two of the other jokers over laying the cables and that while I was doing joining. Oh, we got to go back to the yard. I said, what for? He said, oh, we all got to go back. You'll have to come back later on when you're finished. I said, why? Oh, well, come back. Well, I walked in there and everything just went blur.
Because you had a party put on especially for you when you were 65.
Yeah.
So that's 11 years ago.
Yeah.
And you still work for them until nearly 70.
Yeah. Mm. Must have been. That's when my wife started getting worse with the Parkinson's.
Pam died in 2013.
13, yeah.
Did you have to look after her quite a bit?
Yes. She ended up in a wheelchair. They even put a lift at the back door. So she got herself down and go out and come back again. But she couldn't walk. That was the biggest problem. Mm. She could walk, but not very well. With her shoes had built up 3 inches. And it made it hard. And Parkinson's gradually got worse and worse. And she was in, in one of the homes, just so respite.
Yes, respite, yeah.
Give me a rest. She went to the toilet and she just come walking out the toilet. Bang.
And in the meantime, you'd taken on a part-time job. Tell us about your part-time job.
I was doing that part-time job because a woman named Diana used to come around the shower every day. Mm. And I'd go and do the first run I still do. How I come and get hold of it, the woman down the road used to do it on a different area.
Can you tell us what you were doing?
Delivering junk mail, roughly, pamphlets for New World and all them sort of people. And then that time, there was quite a few. There'd be 9 to 10 every run. Twice a week, same as I'm doing now. But I've got 2 runs instead. Yeah.
Still get exercise.
Yeah. Mm. And I still do.
So coming to New Zealand was probably the best thing you could have done.
Yeah, in some ways I sort of...
You miss your family.
Yeah, I did at start with, but our family weren't that close. Not really. Because I was the only boy. I was the rose between the two thorns. I had this older sister and a younger sister. Mm. There were 5 years between us. My older sister, now it's 5 years, now it's me, and then 5 years later, it was my younger sister.
So, overall, how do you think the Power Board work nowadays?
Don't know, not really.
Don't know.
We'll look at the truck and say, who the hell are they?
What do you think, we should all have solar panels on the roofs of our houses?
I'd like to. I don't have one on mine, because my place would be an ideal for it. Because my actual house was a flat roof once upon a time. Then we bought it off Pam's uncle. And he had a bad leak in it. And so he put up what he called a hick roof on it, a tin roof. He get all this afternoon sun on it. And it'd be all dear for it. But, you know, at my time of day, age, is it worth me doing it? Because it costs quite a bit to do. My place would be ideal for it.
So any further thoughts of what you might do in the future?
No, not really. Just keep on keeping on. Keep them fit. Keep moving. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. When they retire, they stop.
Ray's going to tell us a bit about one of his spare time occupations. I think he was trying to keep it a secret.
Me? Anyway. Well, how it come about was I want the cable and Aaron cardigan knitted, and I couldn't knit. So I asked my mother-in-law if she'd knit it for me. Huh, if you want that knitted, you knit it yourself. Oh, that's nice, isn't it? So I said, Pam, I says, do you think I could do it or not? So I got to go out one day and got a ball of wool and some knit needles and sat down with a book.
How long ago?
Oh, about 40-odd years ago. And we lived in Southampton Street in a flat, and the woman across the road, she could knit. So I went across to her and showed her what I was doing. She said, you're doing it wrong. She showed me how to do it and went back, and Pam was pregnant with my oldest. And I knit this little matinee coat from the baby. That's what I started on. The woman across the road, she said, well, not too bad. So I took on this cable and cardigan.
Wow.
I finished it. I had to pull it out because...
You'd made a mistake.
Yes, I didn't realise, and nobody told me, I knitted tight. So I knit on the needles it said, and it came too small, and I told the lady. She said, you'll have to do a little square and make sure what size needles were. So I turned around, pulled it all out, started again, and carried on ever since.
And you knit all your own jerseys?
Yep.
And hats and socks.
And socks. And I've drew patterns out on graph paper and knit into jerseys.
And do you knit for other people?
I have done, yeah.
And tell us a little bit about the teddy bears.
The trauma bears?
Yes.
There's a woman, her husband's in the orphans, and I rang her one day and I see these little teddy bears. I said, who knit them? She said, I did. I got the pattern here, do you want one? So I took one and I knitted that, done exactly the same as I did with the jersey. That came too small. But that didn't really matter, because when I took the hair, you could see the difference. So the next one I'd done on the bigger needles, and they come the same size again. And I got the bag I carry in town, I got two in there. I carry two around with me all the time.
So you can give them out to people
who might need
a trauma bear.
And I gave one to a little girl in Specsavers one day, because she was crying and that, and she went to give it back to him and told her she could keep it, and she was really pleased, and it stopped her from crying. That's what they're for.
Yes.
And the joke, his wife had given me a pattern, that they got something in their car, and if I see accidents and kids crying, they'll get out and give them one of these teddy bears. And I think she do a lot for the rescue helicopter.
It's
not just for little kids, it's for old people as well. It's quite neat.
And do you sit knitting at night, watching TV?
I do mainly at night. I used to do a lot of jigsaw puzzles, but since we got the new cat, because I've got them big green mats, so
yes,
when you finish, you roll it up. And I was doing it one day, and this little cat, what we just got, come
straight through it and pieces all over the floor.
Yes. I've got a lot of these whiz jig ones, you know. Those I like them when I'm not doing the gardens and lawns and everything.
So what time do you start usually?
Now I've been starting out at about 4:30 in the morning.
And then you finish at about what?
This Saturday I was home just after 6:00. If you get out early, you don't get stopped much. You'd be surprised how many people are out at that time in the mornings. People walking, running, walking the dogs, traffic, paper people. They're all out at that time in the morning. Then I go home and have my breakfast and buy my pushchair up again and then come out and do this one, because when I come in here, I've got to go in and
He's
sign in.
He's coming into the Somerset Village.
You know, I've got to sign in. It's really for safety. And go in and sign in, go around and sign out when they go out again. And it's awesome doing it in here because you walk down the middle of the road.
Yeah.
Summertime is a bit bad because there's a lot of people off what I talk. Yeah.
So summer and winter, you're doing it all year round?
Yep. Twice a week. And the worst time is rain. I've got wet weather gear on, and that's I don't really get wet. It's your hands that get wet.
Then closer to Christmas, tell them what you do then, Ray.
I put my Father Christmas hat on, and I've got T-shirts with all different slogans on them as well. Walk around, and you get lots of comments. You can put a smile on somebody's face. You know, it's
like it.
The other little fellow, Johnny Wheeler. He walks around, it, but he's got a white beard. He looks a bit more authentic, but... Well, I haven't got one of them.
He walks from Hastings to Havelock North every day.
Yeah, not now he doesn't. He's gone as far as the roundabout, I think now. He used to do Harrier running. That's how I got to know him, through the Harriers.
Okay, I think that's a good place to stop. But thank you very much, Ray, for your cooperation and telling
Glad
us about your very interesting life.
I wouldn't say interesting.
Okay.